indiana.edu. To get podcasts, click on the podcast button. For A Moment of Science, I'm Yael Cassander.
And I'm Don Glass.
In sports, Utah State will hold a news conference today, and a person familiar with the situation says the school will announce the hiring of Gary Anderson as the successor for departing football coach Brent Guy. Anderson spent this season as defensive coordinator for 12-0 Utah. Tonight's NFL game has San Diego hosting Oakland in an AFC West matchup. The 4-8 Chargers are three games behind division leader Denver with four to play. The Raiders are 3-9. The NFL Players Association is suing to block the four-game suspensions Kevin Williams and Pat Williams of the Minnesota Vikings and Charles Grant, Deuce McAllister, and Will Smith of the New Orleans Saints received this week for violating the league's anti-doping policy. They are five of the six players who were suspended for testing positive for a banned diuretic that can be used as a masking agent for steroids. Houston Texans long snapper Brian Pittman was not included in the suit. Two members of the AP's top 25 men's basketball poll will share the court tonight in the capital city of the Lone Star State. Number 8, Texas, brings a 5-1 record into its Big 12 Pac-10 hardwood series game against a 12th-ranked UCLA club that's off to a 4-1 start. Eastern Illinois opens Ohio Valley Conference action when it plays host to Tennessee State. The Panthers are coming off a 2-point loss to IPFW that left EIU with a 1-4 record. Tennessee State, meanwhile, is 2-3 after a loss to Belmont. The Tigers hold a 22-16 advantage in their series against Eastern. And the Illinois women will try to snap a four-game losing skid when the Illini host 20th-ranked Virginia in women's basketball action at Assembly Hall tonight. The game is part of the ACC Big Ten Challenge. Virginia has won its three previous matchups with the Illini, but the teams have never faced off in Champaign. Tip-off tonight, just a little past 7:30. That's sports.
Today's programming is made possible in part by Ratio Architects, designers of the M2 on Neal mixed-use project in downtown Champaign, on the web at ratioarchitects.com.
It's 2:43. It's been 6 months now since the earthquake that left almost 88,000 people dead or missing and 5 million people homeless in China. As winter approaches, the disaster victims are struggling. That's what NPR's Lisa Lim discovered when she revisited one family in the quake zone.
The first time I met Jiang Fulan, 4 days after the earthquake, she was burying her mother-in-law. The old lady had died when the family house had collapsed onto her. I couldn't save her, Jiang Fulan told us, tears streaming down her face as she watched her husband digging the grave. She was literally bowed over with grief. The family had also just buried a nephew and two nieces who died in the ruins of their school.
I don't want to live here after this. There's no work, and I'm scared of aftershocks.
Now we've got to their house, and it is just completely flattened. There's just an enormous pile of concrete and bricks and planks of wood, but there's nothing that lets you imagine how this could have once been a house. In July, 7 weeks after the quake, I went back to Hongbai village to track her down. I could scarcely recognize this beaming woman who laughed as she clasped my hand.
I feel much better now. After my mother-in-law died, I was so sad, I couldn't speak.
So we're now walking along the street where their house used to be. I can hardly believe the difference. Last time we came here, barely 7 weeks ago, we had to pick our way among piles of rubble. And now the whole thing has been leveled and it's covered with white tents, which have been donated from the Korean International Cooperation Agency. A new prefab town had already been built. Some 2,000 people were being resettled into tidy rows of blue-roofed huts. Jiang Fulan showed me around the prefab she shares with her husband and 26-year-old son, pointing out the beds, the quilts and wardrobe.
Everything was given to us by other people. We didn't have a thing.
As the displaced cleaned their new houses, there was a sense of optimism, excitement even, and gratitude to the government for organising this shelter over their heads. Now, 6 months after the quake, I've come in search of Jiang Fulan again. It's morning exercise time at the prefab school. I've been told she's working in the school kitchens. When I find her, she still looks cheerful. But life isn't easy. She's only filling in for someone who's sick. She and her husband remain unemployed, like an estimated 80% of the disaster victims. For the first 3 months, they lived off government handouts. Now Jiang Fulan and her husband depend on their 26-year-old son, who, like so many of the young, has gone to a nearby city to look for a job.
Our son doesn't come back much. There's no space for him in the prefab. He can't find a girlfriend or think about marriage, as there's nowhere for them to live.
At the school, the students line up, clutching their lunch bowls. Almost one quarter of the town's school children died in the quake. The community is still dealing with grief, trauma, and the stress of losing everything they've ever worked for.
The quake has changed our characters. My husband gets angry easily. So do I.
As she washes dishes, it's clear reality has set in. It's bitterly cold already. The local government has given out electric blankets and heaters, but the flimsy prefabs will provide little warmth once the snow starts falling. Reconstruction hasn't yet started here, though the government has pledged to spend $440 billion on post-quake building. Everyone here is waiting for the plans for the new town to be unveiled. They don't know when new houses will be built or how they'll pay for them. Jiang Fulan's land was requisitioned. It was used for prefabs, and she hasn't received any compensation yet.
It said the government received donations of money from many different places for disaster victims, but I don't know where that money's gone.
Throughout these months, the disaster victims' mantra has remained the same. We're waiting to see what the government will do for us. Those words, once so full of hope and confidence, are now repeated with mounting worry and desperation. Louisa Lim, NPR News, Hongbai, Sichuan, China.
Coming up this afternoon on The World, global warming means more than weird weather. Rising seas threaten coastal populations worldwide. Experts say America should prepare for a flood of refugees. Planning for climate change, that story in the day's news coming up this afternoon at 3 on The World. President-elect Barack Obama says America will open a new chapter in dealing with climate change. Lester Graham reports the president-elect confirmed he will work toward the plan he outlined during the presidential campaign.
In a surprise video statement that opened the governor's global climate summit in Los Angeles, Obama said there'll be no more denial or delay. As soon as he's president, America will help lead toward global cooperation on climate change, starting with the federal carbon cap and trade program and making investments in clean energy. Bill Kovacs with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce likes the investments idea, but cautions restrictions on greenhouse gas emissions could hurt business.
You need to be very sensitive, especially in a stressed-out economy, that you could end up imposing very huge costs on virtually everybody who participates in the economy.
President-elect Obama said in the video statement he'll work with business.
Any company that's willing to invest in clean energy will have an ally in Washington.
Environmentalists applauded the statement. It's the first on climate change since Barack Obama won the presidency. For the Environment Report, this is Lester Graham.
Watching paychecks shrink and retirement funds dissolve is leading people to change their buying habits. Many are skipping things like natural food because they're seen as luxuries. But Julie Grant reports some analysts say this is a short-term trend.
Michelle DeSalvo's daughter plans to go to college next year, but her husband might need to take a pay cut just to keep his job. So they're trying to save money wherever possible. That means no more shopping at the natural food store.
It's definitely more expensive. I mean, you have to go to things that are less expensive, and natural is definitely not that.
So what has changed in your shopping habits?
I go to Walmart. Yeah, for food. It's cheaper.
Not everyone is rushing to Walmart. Brenda Fisher says her family is struggling to pay for two kids in college, and they're looking for different ways to buy food. She used to stop at the butcher shop at Whole Foods, the natural food supermarket, but not anymore.
So I'd buy their meats because their meats are incredible. So I just can't afford it. I would actually like to buy a whole cow from a farmer because you can get them a lot cheaper, and I just have to get the money together.
Okay, so not everyone wants to buy a cow, but a lot of people are moving away from things that seem more expensive, like natural and organic products. In recent years, those foods have seen huge sales growth, but as the economy has turned sour, so have their sales. Whole Foods has seen a considerable sales drop at its stores, and the company's stock prices plunged more than 70% this year. Nancy Kane is professor of the history of retailing and consumer behavior at the Harvard Business School. She says some people see upscale stores such as Whole Foods as an indulgence, and that's not what they're wanting.
I think we are seeing, a rush away from a lot of luxury right now.
But Kane says that's short term. She says consumers have been floored by the tanking of the stock market and the vulnerability of the financial systems, and they've done something we haven't seen in 25 years. They've stopped buying. But Kane says this is just one moment. She says people will walk back into stores, but they'll have revised priorities for their homes and families.
There's no way anyone's coming out of this moment without being affected by it. And it's a much more complicated story than the rush to Walmart.
Kane says natural food stores like Whole Foods and other environmentally centered companies are actually in just the right place for the long-term economic trend. When consumers start buying again, she thinks many will spend in places that are taking care of workers, animals, and the environment.
And I think we're going to see that the same things that built Whole Foods, that have made the environment and our interconnectedness so important to people, and move that from item number 10 or 20 on people's lists of important issues up to the top 2 to 4. Those aren't going away because we're in the trough of a business cycle.
Kane expects that many people will spend their holiday money at big box discount stores. But she says many who feel they've been treated badly in the economic downturn will go back to the companies they think treat people and the environment better. Kane expects that by early next year, companies that get behind sustainable products will wind up being the economic winners. For the Environment Report, I'm Julie Grant.
In a couple of months, on February 17, 2009, television signals will go digital. Congress is requiring the switch. So in February, if you have an analog TV with rabbit ears, it will be useless unless you get a converter box. Again, the date of the switch, February 17th. Even before the official transition, people have been buying new digital televisions. Rebecca Williams reports the switch to digital TV has some people worried about the growing pile of TV trash.
William Borg says he's really bad at Guitar Hero. So instead, we're watching one of his teenage customers play the game on a huge, flat-screen digital TV.
And this is another reason why customers are after those high-definition TVs, because you can really maximize the overall picture and sound quality.
There's not an analog TV in the place. Best Buy doesn't sell them anymore. You can't buy them anywhere, actually, except maybe at a thrift store. Digital TV is killing the analog star.
I think the end of analog TV is here.
Megan Pollack is with the Consumer Electronics Association. She represents TV makers and big box retailers.
Just like things like record players, certain people will just fall in love and keep them, for as long as they possibly can. But I think in the next, 5 or 10 years, it'll be very, very hard to find one in anyone's home.
That's right. Analog TVs are going to be museum pieces. Or more likely, filling up landfills. Megan Pollack says sales for digital TVs go up every year. She expects 36 million to sell next year. In February, all broadcasters are required to switch over to digital TV. If you have one of those old TVs with the rabbit ears or an antenna, you'll have to get a converter box. If you're hooked up to cable or satellite, you're fine. You don't have to buy a new TV. But TV recyclers say they're seeing more people getting rid of perfectly good analog TVs anyway. Linda McFarland runs a TV and computer recycling business.
Now we're going to really start seeing these in droves.
We're standing in front of 7-foot-tall stacks of old TVs. McFarland says of all electronics, TVs are the least valuable. And TVs are full of toxic stuff, especially lead in the cathode ray tubes. Most of the time, we export our TV waste. It ends up in Asia or Africa. There, everyone from grandparents to little kids use acid or open flames to melt the circuit boards to get to the tiny bits of gold and silver.
Children are working on top of these electronic heaps and, you know, breathing cyanide acid.
Linda McFarland says it's easy for recyclers in the U.S. to make deals with importers in other countries. They sneak the TV waste in, along with much more valuable computer parts.
You might just stick it on containers and tell the marketplace who's buying from you, I'll give you two good containers for every container I give you.
McFarland says that probably happens 9 out of 10 times. She wants new laws to force recyclers to take care of TVs correctly. That's at the end of a TV's life. Others want to start at the beginning. They want TV manufacturers to do more. Barbara Kyle is with the Electronics Take Back Coalition. She says it's not just the lead in old TVs. Many new digital TVs have toxic mercury in them. And that's hard to remove, too.
I think of the LCD TV as the poster child for how this industry is still not thinking about how to design with the end of life of their products in mind.
But she says some companies are getting better at taking back their old TVs for recycling. She says Sony, Samsung, and LG already have good programs. Others are just beginning. Kyle says whatever you do, don't throw your TV in the trash. She says it'll take some work, but you can find a responsible recycler, one that doesn't export waste to developing countries. For the Environment Report, I'm Rebecca Williams.
The Environment Report is a production of Michigan Radio. Support comes from the Joyce Foundation, the George Gund Foundation, and USDA's Cooperative Extension Service. Have something to say about the Environment Report? Send email to feedback@environmentreport.org.
Earth and sky.
The opportunity to demonstrate and sell carbon offsets from improved forest management and from forest protection is just now beginning to be experimented with in the United States.
That's Neil Sampson, president of the Sampson Group, a forestry consulting firm. He's talking about the market for carbon offsets, tradable measures of a forest's proven capacity to store carbon. Here's how they work.
We can say that that much carbon was added to the wood stock in that forest. We convert that to carbon dioxide equivalent, and that becomes the amount that we can take to the market under the market rules.
The market for these carbon credits might grow if polluters become legally required to purchase them to offset their own greenhouse gas emissions. If so, this could change the face of forests.
When we commit people to manage for carbon, they